Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing?
A little better this week. I think last couple weeks were pretty tough, you know, and then it was a little bit cathartic getting the day we had all those services, and it's still lingering, but sunny out there. The temperature is like above zero. There's a lot of positive things in this world always, and you got to just look for them.
So some personnel issues with the Oilers. We have Iropakarinen leaving, and we have a goalie, Mikko Koskinen, who's rumored to be coming in. Let's deal first with the certain news of Iropakarinen leaving. I guess it's certain news.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a report from as far as I know, well-respected guy in a major Finnish website. And while he's talking about a player going from Canada and the United States to Russia, the fact is the player is a Finn, so it's every reason that he would be authoritative on the matter. This is Pekka Jalonen, and he said, Edmonton Oilers forward Iropakarinen leaves Alberta in NHL. His new team is Metallurg Magnitogorsk in KHL.
It's also believable because Pakarinen didn't exactly tear up the pee patch this year as an Edmonton Oiler, although he did on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. Enough so that if he had been brought back, Bruce, I would have thought that's a good idea. Because I see him as a valuable fifth line player,
even.
Yeah, fifth line player, like better player. You know, Zach Cassian didn't get anything done at even strength either, and he was not nearly as good as Pakarinen on the power play. So if Pakarinen had come in at half the cost of Zach Cassian, which he would have, then that might have made sense. So I wasn't necessarily against this player coming back. Mm-hmm. He really was a hell of a penalty killer. He was one of the few people, even when the penalty kill was terrible, who was getting the job done, and then he continued to do so. So in a way, we've gotten rid of the same player twice in the same 2-year span. Anton Lander was similar. Four-flag guy who could really get it done on the penalty kill, and now Pakarinen. I just wonder, you know, what the team might be like, would have been like with Lander and Pakarinen and full time on the kill this year, and how much of a difference that might have made for the team.
Yeah, they are very similar. They're both 1991 birthdays. They're both guys that came over, played only with the Oilers, and were always tweeners, up and down, never stuck, you know, long term in either city. Like in Pakarinen's case, he played parts of every season in both the NHL and the AHL, 4 years that he was here. Both the same age. They both ripped it up in the AHL, to be honest. Pak's scoring numbers down in the AHL were excellent. 27 goals in 66 games. You know, that's pretty darn good.
Yes, excellent. And, for the AHL, modern AHL, tough to score.
Absolutely.
That's Ty Ratty numbers.
Jack, I mean, had 71 points this year, if I read the stats page right.
And Lander in his last year in the AHL was probably the MVP when he didn't play the full year, but man, he just ripped it up when he did play. So yeah, I just like those two players more than a lot of fans. And
I always liked
obviously
Anton Lander more than
the coaching staff.
I always liked Anton Lander, and I still do. And I'm very pleased to see his success. I don't know if you noticed in the KHL, he was a first line center of the championship team, Akbars Kazan. And
they won the Gagarin
Cup, named after Yuri Gagarin, the cosmonaut, Soviet cosmonaut who was the first human in space and to orbit the Earth and to live back in 1961.
Did someone die?
We don't know any of the enough about the pre-story, but I mean he accomplished all those feats. And he was the first.
Did the Russians kill anyone trying?
A few dogs.
dogs count.
These are the dogs. Laika and the cosmonauts. And they actually became a pop band. And Laika was a dog who was first dog in space. There's pictures of her, and she died in space. And she was mourned.
So the reason I'm not upset about Pekarinen leaving, though, is because he really was mediocre at even strength. Right. I mean, even in a fourth line role, he didn't consistently, you know, it's like so many of these players, man, if you're going to be that guy on the fourth line, you've got to do something to earn your keep. And so PK was definitely something, but at even strength, you must also do something. And so if he had consistently hit, let's say, Pekarinen, you know, and, you know, he consistently, it wasn't like he didn't hit, but like just a little bit more, like Clutterbuck it up a little bit more, and he might still be here. Because he was close.
Klinkenberg it up?
Clutterbuck it up. Who's Klinkenberg?
Who's that guy? Klinkenhammer. Yeah, it's long enough gone, but I should always remember a name like
Klinkenberg. Klinkenberg is the Globe and Mail reporter who covers the Oilers, Marty Klinkenberg.
Right, that's where I got mixed up. Klinkenhammer, he was Anton Lander's teammate. He, too, won the Gagarin Cup yesterday. So, anyway, he was... Pack didn't quite hit to that degree, but the penalty killing, that was his one thing, and... You know, he played an honest game, to my mind. Like, he showed up. He skated hard. He skated hard. He skated both ways. He was a decent defensive player, as you'd expect from a penalty killer. You know, he was plus one on the Oilers this year, so he wasn't getting killed out there, at least on the goals front. But his scoring stats were below the Mendoza line. Like, so he's ultimately replaceable. You know, that's the thing about being a replacement-level player is you are yourself replaceable. I just say, make sure you bring in a damn penalty killer this year, because last year they let three penalty killers walk, and I don't know how effective a job they did of replacing them.
There's going to be much more of an outcry, of course, if Slepyshev hits the road, because he's got a real hardcore nub of fans out there. I'm not in that group because he, well, they never used him on the PK, but so we can just
or the power play,
or like the
he
power
was strictly
play,
even strength,
and at even strength, yeah, nothing, not enough happened. Like, there was always good moments, but again, it's one of those places. If they bring him back, like on $1 million contract, I'll think, yeah, okay, like he can go to the minors. That doesn't no skin off anyone's nose except for Darryl Cates, right? Because he'd have to pay that, but. If he doesn't come back, Slepyshev, I'm not going to worry about it either. So,
That's right. They're borderline players, and you know there's going to be changes. Now, my hope is that the changes aren't only around the margins, but if you know, there's certainly better players than Eero Pekkarinen available out there to sign. Just make sure you get one of them.
And you, like you say, make sure you know you have some PK guys. So, I mean, I guess they have three that come top of mind. To hit Strom, Kyra, and RNH, I think are all credible penalty killers. I'm not sure that Cassian is anymore.
No,
he's pretty marginal.
Mind. I didn't like Cassian on the PK this year. Really
no, he was teamed with, you know, Mark Letestu.
Yeah, and they got killed.
Who really struggled, but they got killed as a unit. Now maybe with someone else, Cassian. I mean, he's big enough, he's agile enough, but I remember Ray Ferraro talking about how this is about two-thirds of the year, how Cassian had blocked like three shots or something like that all year on the penalty kill. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Oh, like so you can easily, Matt Hendricks could block three shots with his can in one shift.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is where the people would say, Chris Russell blocked 225 shots or whatever the hell it was this year, you know, and poo-poo all that. But it's pretty hard to only block three. Like, you almost have to actively be getting out of the way of pucks or never, ever be in the shooting lane.
Hey, I wonder how... You know what would be interesting to know, Bruce, is to break down the block shot stats into power play, even strength. I don't know if anyone does that because that's really significant because a block shot on the PK is way different. Like, you could argue, like, you know, to be out there at even strength blocking shots, well, you know, that's good you block the shot, but maybe you did something wrong. But on the PK, it's always a good thing, I think, to block that shot. So if Russell, you know, has a higher percentage of PK block shots, you know, per minute, like that's something to – for us stats geeks to
for the data strippers to
that's an August post. After someone says something really nasty about Chris Russell, I could go, yo, look at this, his blocks per minute on the PK is just out of this world good, you bastards. I think we're done with Pekkarinen. Good luck to Eero Pekkarinen. And like you say, he gave an honest effort.
He's an easy player to like, you know, and he never said, he you know, those guys that get bumped in and out of the lineup and keep their mouth shut about it, I respect the hell out of those guys. And there's always, you know, like a, at least one 6'7" defenseman or a
Greiba.
13, 14, 4. Yeah, Greiba, Mark Fane. You know, with guys that aren't really in there, and they never say anything bad about the organization, no matter what happens to them, even when they get sent down. The same happened to Pac-Marine in 4 years out of four.
Mark Fane did have 3.6 million good reasons not to say a word every single year.
Well, that's true. And Eero Pakarinen had a one-way contract the last 2 years, and that was his reward for being a good tweener. And so let's get another good tweener, and let's move on. I hear we might be getting another Finn. So if the strategy is Finn to win, well, we've got, of course, Puljujärvi and maybe a new mentor, if your story is correct.
Mikko Koskinen is the goalie that's being rumored to be coming in. So Friedman Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada talked about the Oilers being the front runner in negotiations for this KHL goalie who was on not the championship team, but the best team in the regular season, I believe, the St. Petersburg club. And so he's 30 next year, Bruce Koskinen.
Yep.
And we don't know for sure that the Oilers are signing him, though Bob Stauffer has talked about the Oilers going to the KHL for a goalie repeatedly. And he certainly didn't deny the Koskinen rumor. He hopped on board with some additional information about this. So this has all the hallmarks of a rumor that's going to come true. Now the part of it that's upsetting people, well, it's easy to upset. Anything you do, you're going to upset some Oiler fans, right? There's always like 10% who are going to lose their minds over one thing or another. And I'm in that 10% on some issues. But on this one, there's a couple things that are upsetting people. First is age. They were hoping the Oilers might bring in like a goalie who could be the long-term replacement for Talbot, who's more around 24, 25. And they were hoping for someone who would come in at $1 million, $1.5 million a year. And the rumor from Avis Kalnins of, I think he's from, he must be from Latvia.
That's a Belarus. That's got to be Belarus. With the,
don't you think it might be like Latvian?
Oh, Latvia. Lithuanian? Pardon me. The ones with the S's are Latvians.
Yeah, or Lithuanians. Anyway, he's a Eastern European hockey reporter for Hockey Bus. And he's saying he's heard, and this is being treated, there's a story in a Finnish newspaper about this, like $5 million over 2 years. For this contract, which on a team which is right up against the cap is a lot of money for the backup goalie. But, you know, Bruce, if this guy can come in and perform, no one's going to be complaining about the money, I don't think. And here's my argument about backup goalies, and I made it in the post I wrote about this, is when you slot in Eero Pakarinen, he's on the fourth line. When you slot in Johan Ovitu, he's on the third pairing. When you slot in whoever this goalie is going to be, who's going to play for Talbot when Talbot's out, he's the number one goalie. Absolutely. I just think that the backup goalie. Game. Yeah, he plays the whole game. He's in the toughest spot. He's the most important player on the ice. And because we haven't had that player for 3 years running, a player who could do that job, Talbot has been grossly overused and probably was injured last year. Maybe related to some repetitive strain-ish injuries from overuse. So last year I thought this, but I thought Brassois was an okay bet, so I didn't voice it loudly at all. But for me this year, this was a huge priority, Bruce, in bringing in someone who can challenge Cam Talbot. Along with a puck-moving defenseman, this was the top priority in my books.
Well, getting a backup goalie, well, he has a few things in his favor. The fact that he's not a kid isn't all bad by any means. He's been around the block a few times. I mean, if you're looking for a 2-year contract, you want a guy that's 21 or a guy who's 29 going on 30 for goalie. I'm not sure I mind that. He's 6'7". He's even more monstrous than the Swedish goalie monster there, which is going to make the blood run cold in a certain segment of our audience.
Oh, the monster.
Yeah, the monster.
The goose, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jonas Gustafsson. Anders Nilsson was the other one. Yeah, he was the Swedish goalie monster. That's right. And Gustafsson was the monster. Anders Nilsson, He's got a very similar background to Koskinen. They're both drafted by New York Islanders, and they got their NHL cup of coffee with the Islanders.
Drafted high in both cases.
Edmonton went out and picked him up as free agent. They got Anders, they got Nilsson very cheap. In his case, he was very good for a short time, and then his game fell apart, and they traded him out of here. And now he's a sort of a steady NHL backup goalie with Vancouver Canucks. The kind of steady backup goalie I'm not sure Edmonton's had in the last 2 years. And I mean, they've cycled through, what is it, four backup goalies in Chiarelli's 3 years so far?
It's been tough because you would have, you know, Laurent Boissois was not a bad bet, right? Like he looked the part. He's a big goalie. He moves well. Can make big saves. He had some success at the minor league level. Not great success, but some success. He had some real success 1 year as a backup when he did get in the year that Gustafsson, the monster, failed. Boissois came in and he succeeded. He had a higher save percentage that year than did Talbot in I think it was eight games. It was a very small sample size. So the bet last year on him was not ridiculous. Like it made sense. Like this is what you would hope, right, for Boissois to come in and to be that 24-year-old guy who looks like the heir apparent. And it just didn't happen. He just fell totally on his face to the point where you could not count on him again this year. His play was so weak at the NHL level this past year. It was so unconvincing. How could you, and if you're the manager of the team, say, oh, we're going to make that bet again?
Right.
Would you have made that bet again, Bruce?
Well, yeah.
I would not.
I understood the bet at the time. What I didn't particularly like last summer was the failure of the organization to go out and get any sort of even sort of proven goaltending at the number three level. They signed this guy, Eddie Pasquale, who never played an NHL game before and still hasn't played an NHL game, who got traded out of the Bakersfield during the season. So they had Brossois, and then they had Nick Ellis, another guy with no experience. And when Talbot got hurt, Brossois came in. He played every minute of every game because they didn't even trust Ellis to come in and clean up in a backup role. You know, in a couple of games mm-hmm. where Brossois got blown out, they still didn't pull him and put Ellis in. So it wasn't just the number two, but it was number two and the number three. Now, the current situation is very different. I think Al Montoya is ideally placed as a number three caliber yes. goalie. To me, he's every bit the goalie that, let's go back here, Martin Gerber, Yan Denis, Richard Bachman, that were the number one and good solid number ones for the AHL club. And when those guys did get called up, as they all did, they were decent and better than decent. I mean, Martin Gerber, he was sensational, but he got three games and he won them all. I think he had a one goals against average or something. But, you know, he was a guy that you could bring him up and you'd say, you wouldn't say, who the hell is this guy? Like you would about Nick Ellis. You'd say, oh, yeah, Martin Gerber.
Yeah.
He's played in the NHL a few teams. He's played internationally. You know, he's got a lot of mileage under his belt. And last year, they just didn't have that. And to me, that was the mistake.
So your complaint is
they didn't have a two or a three that was really, you know, they didn't have a three to cover the two.
You would have liked to see them bring in Montoya like at the start of the year, not yes. at the end. Even in December, man, they needed to move mm-hmm. fast. That's when mm-hmm. it really got on my nerves, when Brossois was clearly struggling and they clearly didn't trust Ellis. They needed to move then. They moved a month too late and they paid a price. So this is the good thing about Koskinen, and he mm-hmm. does sign, is that the acquisition cost is only the salary cap hit, like mm-hmm. it's zero. So that's a good thing. I agree that the Oilers are in kind of a win now mode on a certain level, and having a more veteran goalie who maybe could handle the pressure isn't a terrible idea. If you look at his numbers, though, so there was a couple goalies, Grubauer in Washington and Kincaid in New Jersey, after two of the best starters in the game, Corey Schneider and Braden Holtby, faltered this year. These guys stepped in and actually made a huge contribution to their teams in terms of making the playoffs. When you compare Koskinen to those players, he does not stack up well, because both Grubauer and Kincaid were goalies who had been working their way up for years yes. within those systems, and had played at the NHL level for a couple years and had done well at the NHL level. So Koskinen doesn't scream out that kind of really excellent, super safe bet. Like they were kind of like Talbot was in New York, right? When after he had been there a couple of years and was ready to move into the starting job. So Koskinen isn't that. So he's not one of these prime backup guys where you just have a super confident sense that if the starter does fail, like we've got a guy here who's chomping at the bit and is ready. So this is far more of an unknown in that regard. And it would have been nice to bring in Cam Talbot version 2 as the backup for Cam Talbot version 1. Mm-hmm. But that would have cost a lot more.
Yes.
And the Oilers can't afford, they need to stock their draft, mm-hmm. Their farm system with players too. So, and the other thing is, Bruce, they have these younger goalies like Stuart Skinner what's Wells's first name?
Dylan
Wells. Am I forgetting anyone else? They have Sean Sterrett, who was in the ECHL, and I think Shane Sterrett, who did very well.
Yeah.
So there are some possibilities that are 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. away, right? So maybe they're thinking, well, we'll get by with these two. This is a good bet for next year.
Francois is gone. He's a group 6. And yeah, I don't see the Oilers wanting to bring him back, and I don't see him wanting to come back. I think he's in a very much a situation where he'll exercise his group 6 and go and get his second opinion, as Craig Tavish famously put it, with some other organization.
Well, Sterrett's ready to play in the AHL,
I don't
right?
think Nick Ellis is coming back. So Sterrett, and there's room for Elmer.
And Skinner?
There's room for Elmer.
Or is Skinner is he old enough to move to the AHL next year?
That's the tricky part, because they do have Skinner. He's not signed yet, David. Wells was drafted the year before Skinner.
But Wells is signed.
And he was signed first, but they're both 98 birthdays, meaning that under most circumstances, Skinner would turn pro 1 year after his draft. But technically, the Oilers could send him back for an overage season.
Wouldn't be a terrible idea.
Not even sign him, so he's not on the 50-man list until the end of the season, like they did with Brandon Davidson, for example, a few years ago.
I suspect they'll sign him.
I think they'll sign him because he's played 4 years a junior, and I think you get to a certain point where there's not much more they're going to learn at that level, and you've got to get him at the next level. So there's a bit of a problem, even if you subtract, as I do, Laurent Brossoit and Nick Ellis from the equation. You bring on Mikko Koskinen. You got Shane Sterrett. I think he's still got a year to run. Montoya's got a year to run. And you're up to 6 pro goalies. So that fills you right through the ECHL.
Well, Wells can play in the ECHL, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I'm if Skinner plays in the, Montoya could play in the ECHL and remain sharp. I mean, they don't need necessarily to have him in the AHL. You could sign Skinner and have him and Sterrett there battling it out for playing time. Or, they're all competing for those 2 AHL jobs. So
anyway,
so that's another – but they do have Skinner and Wells, so they have these younger players who might be ready, and Sterrett, who could be ready in a couple of years. So maybe that's part of the thinking in getting an older player too. Although I just think they probably thought, okay, who's the best goalie that we can get with no acquisition cost? Who is that? And they landed on this player. He happened to be 29, so he's not so old that you don't want to make any kind of bet on him. And they placed it that way. That's how I read this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he could be the next Mikhail Shtelenkov, right? For all we know, and yeah, those guys are just total unknowns until they actually roll the dice and see what they do.
How did Mikhail Shtelenkov?
That was a while ago. Just before Curtis Joseph.
Bruce, how did that name pop into your head?
It was a Russian who came out of nowhere and showed up in Edmonton and played a good chunk of a season here with indifferent results. Well, his fans of a certain vintage might remember him. He was a 1A.
No, you're the only one.
Was it Bob Essensa? Bob Essensa and Mikhail Shtelenkov that were the netminders? So maybe it was just after. So anyway.
That was not the decade of darkness. That was the kind of the era of awfulness in the mid 90s. And after all the great players left, there was what, 3 or 4 years. It was really pretty downtime in Edmonton. They started to bounce back pretty quickly though. I give that organization credit. All right, Bruce.
Let's
What else we got on the list to talk about? Oh, your heavy hockey post, Bruce, got a lot of interest this season. So what was your thesis there? What are you?
So 98-99 on Stolinkov. He was between Curtis Joseph, free agent, and Tommy Salo. They had to trade for Tommy Salo to fill the gap. So he was in that year. So heavy hockey. Change the subject completely. That was the big focus of Peter Chiarelli when he first arrived in Edmonton. I don't know that he coined the term heavy hockey, but he sure made it.
That has been around for years.
Or unpopular in these parts with his repeated use of the word. I quoted a single passage from his opening news conference, and I bolded all the uses of the word heavy or heaviness or heavier. And there was 8 of them in one rant. And 4 uses of the word hard, and there was also big and huge, and you know, words like that all in there. And his message was was a little bit more nuanced than that takeaway might suggest, in the sense that he said, you don't have to just be big and huge. You can be heavy on your sticks. You have to be harder on the puck. And I agreed actually with a lot of what he said. And I'd certainly been noting for years that the smaller, younger Oilers getting pushed around in games against bigger, tougher teams like any of the California teams, St. Louis Blues, Chiarelli's Boston Bruins would come in here and lean on the Oilers. And it was a weakness.
Wild, the Blues, the Ducks, the Kings, the Sharks. Yeah, it was just it was an obvious flaw in the team in that era of hockey. It was a major, major problem. And I'm betting at the time that 98% of Oilers fans would have agreed with that and wanted to solve that problem. We're overjoyed when it happened with Lucic.
But here's the thing: like those teams had big, skilled players. You had, you know, Kessler and Getzlaff and Perry, 3 huge, snarly guys in Anaheim, or Kopitar, Dustin Brown, as Gowdy. Well as the grinding forwards that they had in L.A., like Jordan Nolan and Kyle Clifford, and what's the other guy, 71, just big banging wingers. And wherever you went, I mean, St. Louis had David Backes that would just push his way around and through everything. But he also had skill. You know, he had some.
That's what you really need.
Stick and he put it in the net once in a while.
Maroon, Lucic, and Cassian weren't without skill skill.
But the Oilers.
They're not the best players on the team, though. I mean, that's the ultimate. That's every team would love to have Chris Pronger and Mark Messier, right?
The Oilers had either skilled players or big players. They had nobody really who was big and skilled. Dustin Penner being the one exception. He wasn't a mean guy by any means. But he certainly was huge and he had skill. So, but he was very much the exception. All of the skilled guys were small and all the big guys played on the fourth line and third pairing because they weren't very good. And so you had this huge gap where anybody had a big and skilled player. The Oilers had no one to match up against them. They either had a big guy who would get beat or a skilled guy that would get overpowered. And it was a constant, ongoing problem. At one point, I did an analysis in the middle of the 2014 season, 2013-14, like a year and a half before Chiarelli got here. And I measured out the sizes of the teams, and then I figured by ice time, top 9 forwards, top 4 defensemen. And at that time, of 13 guys in the top unit, the Oilers didn't have a single guy who weighed the NHL average. Like, it was a monstrous – it wasn't just a weak suit. It was almost a void. And it had to be addressed.
So, Bruce, do you think what went wrong with the Oilers this year, though, to bring it to the present, is that Chiarelli misdiagnosed the team? Or do you think what was wrong is that Sekera, their best defenseman, got hurt? Larson and Klefbom were injured, playing hurt. Cam Talbot had an off year. Do you think that if those things hadn't happened, let's say that Talbot, Sekera, Klefbom, and Larson had all replicated the years they had previously, and let's say they had done that, do you think we'd be talking about problem with heavy hockey today or not?
Well, certainly all the narrative is that the league is going in the faster, quicker, higher pace direction. And some of that narrative is coming from Peter Chiarelli himself, who in his more latest press conference, you could probably bold a whole bunch of uses. The word pace or similar. Anyway, and the fact is that the heavy teams that the Oilers were modeled after both got absolutely destroyed in the playoffs, LA and Anaheim. they scored 7 goals in 8 games between the two of them, both swept, the only two in the league. Mm-hmm. So the narrative, you know, there's some truth in the way the wind is blowing, that the quicker transition game is where it's at. And the Oilers maybe took too many steps in the wrong direction in terms of overcompensating. They did get some big skilled players. And of course, Leon Draisaitl is that lovely combination that's both that was waiting in the wings. But their game was too slow. I mean, I watched Vegas destroy LA, and man, they were playing at an entirely different tempo than you'd ever see from the Oilers. And I'm talking about defensively and offensively.
Yeah, there's just no doubt about it, the Oilers' defense. And even with Secker, Klefbom, and Larson, let's say we're all healthy. I mean, you know, it's hard to say, but you might have still been thinking, geez, it would be great if the Oilers had one more really speedy guy who can really move the puck back there and get the job done. I mean, that's a real possibility. So I think that's the case. And it's certainly the conclusion that Chiarelli's come to, along with, you know, every Oiler fan. You know, a year too late for Chiarelli. If last summer he thought, I need to get like the priority for this summer is a top four demon, even though we did so well. You know, he might have paid a price to get that kind of player.
Yeah.
Hopefully wouldn't have thought that Travis Hamonic was that player. But, you know, he went with Chris Russell instead.
No acquisition costs versus three.
And so I'd way rather have Chris Russell on his deal than Travis Hamonic on his deal with his acquisition cost. With the acquisition cost. That's an easy call. But, you know, maybe he should have been thinking, I've just got to go overboard here. Like when I trade Jordan Eberle, the whole focus, like whatever the best defenseman I can possibly, best puck moving defenseman I can possibly get for Eberle, that's the move. And I'll throw in something else so he's probably kicking himself and thinking,
well, I mean, he
thinking he should have done that, but
he really changed the balance in the top six. I mean, they still got the three big centers and McDavid, Draisaitl, Nuge. Now all three of them being paid. I mean, we worked through the cheap contract era for the latter are two of those guys. But the wingers, I mean, he had Hall, he had Eberle, he had Yakupov as, you know, promising scoring wingers. Those guys are all gone. And who's there that's taking their place?
Yeah, well,
Drake Caggiula and his 13 goals and 7 assists. You know, I mean, it's there's players that are trying, but they're just they're way short on top six wingers. That's become a real weakness of the club.
Yeah. Well, I think Chiarelli, it was either him, Hursett, or someone like it's. I think you can get wingers. I think if you're smart about it, it's the easier position to fill than center, obviously. But defense is hard. It's hard to get these really good defensemen, and you have to draft them and develop them. And look at the price they paid for Adam Larson, who I think is a good defenseman. They sure paid a dear price.
Yes,
and Chris Russell isn't cheap. Big contract, Oscar Klefbom, they had to draft that guy. Darnell Nurse, they had to draft that guy, and they're going through the growing pains with both of those players. They're both kind of wildly inconsistent to this point in their careers, I think it's fair to say, often based on injuries and usage, but both of them incredibly inconsistent hockey players at this point. And it's going to take some time with both of them, you know, but next year they're both old enough where they could easily both turn a corner. But I still think, you know, if they've got Koskinen, I think the other thing they really need now is another defenseman. And maybe they should wait on Matt Benning to develop first, but I think Matt Benning as a seventh defenseman is cheap enough. They can probably get him cheap enough that he could be this. If they count on him as a seventh D man, that might be the best plan going forward and bring in a good puck moving defenseman.
Yeah. I like Benning as a third pairing guy, but as a 5-6-7, or you can use him or not as the case may be. That's a nice player. Cause there's there's promising things about Matt Benning, and he's still young and he's still, you know, gaining experience.
Yeah.
But there is a space there for a Scooter, I think.
You can't count on Sekera necessarily, and if he's not good to go, you've got to have someone this year. So they've got to get, I think, a puck-moving defenseman of some caliber, and it's going to be really hard to do that. You know, it's interesting. They might, again, go to Europe for that player because let's say that it is more possible now for smaller defensemen to thrive in the NHL game. There's probably 10 to 15 smaller-sized defensemen in all these different European leagues who've been playing there because they were deemed to be too small at some point in the recent times by the NHL. So let's maybe that's where they're going to go, is get one of those guys.
They got one this year, Johan Ovitu. I mean, he played 1 year in the NHL or 25 games in the NHL, but he was
yes.
a 27-year-old Europe-born and trained player. And maybe, you know, there is that market out there, and the Oilers have tried before and struck out more than they've struck gold. But it is certainly an option that's available. I mean, that's where they got Eero Pakarinen, to go back to the beginning of our conversation. But defenseman, I mean, Anton Belov. I mean, where would the Oilers have been without Anton Belov, David?
He wasn't as terrible as everybody said. He was, you know, he wasn't the worst player on that team, and not by a long shot. There was way worse players.
He was neither the problem nor the solution.
Yeah, but he was not a total disaster, and there were total disasters on that team. Well, Bruce, let's leave it there. We didn't cover everything on our list, but I think we've covered enough for today. So thanks for talking today.
All right. And we'll look forward to seeing if this Koskinen character actually does get signed and what the price point really is. But they've got a better situation in goal with Al Montoya as a proven number three that they can bury his contract than they had before. So I think that's the one improved situation that we need. We needed Al Montoya last summer.
That's a good point. Yeah, with three goalies who you can count on at the NHL level on some level, it's not a bad idea. Thanks again, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.